Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Hello, I'm Tian Wei, and welcome to World Insight. We begin today with a special series of conversations I had recently with global business leaders on how business leaders adapt to a rapidly changing world. I'm sure there could be inspirations for you and me. First up, Stefan Harton, the chairman of the Robert Bosch GmbH Board of Management. The company is a leading global supplier of tech and services. Recently, Stefan's conversation with Elon Musk in Bosch Connects the World 2024 went viral on the potential of artificial intelligence and the future landscape of electronic mobility within the automotive industry. Since its first presence in China back in the year 1909, the Bosch Group has witnessed China's transformation. In the year 2020, China became its largest single market for the first time. Here is my talk with Stefan. Mr. Chairman, your company, a very influential one, yet remains low-key, but I have noticed so much structural adjustments as a result of all the dynamic changes in the world. Tell me more about your vision behind these structural changes.
And what you see right now that's most important is that markets are developing to an own characteristic and personality. And you can see that in China because the Chinese consumer is a very demanding and a very specific consumer, right? Also quite different to the consumer in Europe and in the US. So what you need to really be successful in China is also an empowered organization in China. Mm-hmm. And that's what, for example, we just did in the automotive sector. We have an automotive sector leadership completed in China, so that they can act independently very near to the customers and then also having a good consumer insight.
Mm. Recently, I noticed some wonderful conference you have hosted, international conferences, and in which some dynamic voices in innovation have spoken. You were interacting with them. For example, those that are in the AI and also in the electronic cars. So a lot of quotes from there, but the way you ask also shows the deep thinking that you and your company put into to get to the front line of the changes. Tell us more about that.
Well, specifically right now, you see that we have both things happening. On one hand, we sometimes see the world more negative than we have seen it some years ago, right? Because we had COVID and we now have a slower growth. It all seems to be so difficult, right? On the other hand, you see at the same time a technological explosion happening with the AI technology, which is now extending its capability to language modeling. And that gives us a complete new opportunity. So we have to really go deeper into this to understand what effects it will have. I think it will have profound effects, as the mobile phone, for example, had. We all cannot imagine that we would be taken away by our mobile phones, right? But in the future, I think the generative AI models will have a deep impact on our lives.
Yeah. Of course, this is very general, you just explained, as to exactly how it is impacting on different components of your industry. What are you trying to do now, right now, yeah, on the ground?
I mean, the key thing is that with language models, you can generate data. And with these data, we can then use it for example, to make better cars or safer cars. Mm-hmm. The specific aspect of these models is that they cannot just analyze a picture where you can see then a car and a bicycle and a light post or something like this, but they can interpret the picture. Mm-hmm. For example, if they see on the picture a ball coming out of the sideline of a street, the interpretation of that is much easier than after the ball, probably a child comes on the road. So it's a much more dangerous situation than if you would just see the ball. Because driving in a car, you can ride over a ball, not a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. But if you see a ball coming, you probably should stay on the brakes because there's a child to come.
That certainly is a very vivid example you just give. But what does that mean for you? Because a lot of these innovations you cannot predict. And how it's going to be applied in businesses or in different sectors you are working on cannot be predicted, at least not too much. So how would you be able to plan ahead to prepare something terrific, a gigantic to happen?
Well, that's the problem. You can't plan anymore. You have to be elastic and flexible. And that's also for the most modern people you have in your company. So let's say the AI experts that did the neural network work, the deep learning work, they had to rethink their entire work when the new generative AI models came up. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the nature of what happens right now. We have to be way more elastic and way more adaptive. And that's, by the way, very typical for Chinese companies and also Chinese people, right? They are adjusting quick to the new environment, to the new technology available, mm-hmm. and apply it as soon as they can.
But you are also seeing complexities in terms of technology cooperation. And as a result, some companies have chosen to do two versions. Others have been trying to still think about their way out. What is the general plan that you have in mind, and you are working so hard with your colleagues, especially here in China?
Well, in China, it's a good network to have partners and cooperation partners. So we are still in the process of funding more new joint ventures, right? So we're extending our partnerships because it makes total sense also to do innovation in China and not just do it the way that you produce something on the world in the US or in Europe, bring it over to China and think you can just sell it. Normally, it has to be adopted anyway, and why not just do it with partners in China? By the way, knowing that things are normally moving a bit faster in China, mm-hmm. having to be adapted more often, and that's a typical sense of doing also then a second technology path. So in some areas, it doesn't make sense to do it twice. In other areas where it's, let's say, consumer-oriented or nearer to the customer behavior, it makes absolutely sense to do it twice because it's different.
At the very beginning of China reform opening up, JV was the idea, right? Joint venture. But now, when we are in a very different stage, obviously you are looking at JV at a very elevated level to be having Chinese partners to go ahead.
Yeah, but still JVs make sense in a lot of cases.
It's like a marriage, isn't it? Everybody have to make it work.
It makes sense when you add two capabilities which are there, right? And you could either do collaborations through contracts, but you can also go through JVs. Mm. JVs are a bit more complex to set up, yeah, but because you have to have antitrust regulations and so things covered. On the other hand, you can split the business in various joint ventures. For example, like we did in hydraulics. In hydraulics, we just founded three joint ventures with three different partners for hydraulics, machine automation, and electrification, because there are different characteristics were necessary for different markets, and that makes perfect sense then to go for JVs.
There were hypes about decoupling, you know, words like that, and then they turned into what some call de-risking. Whatever the terminologies, it seems that business community understand it inside out, the real nature of doing business, especially with supply chains and value chains. What is your current interpretation of where we are today?
Well, I still believe that decoupling is a bad idea, because it's kind of illogical that you have one planet and you try to decouple the planet. I mean, we are far beyond that point. We collaborate on all kinds of levels. There is areas of technology where countries and regions want to have through security precautions normally want to have an exclusive space. Okay, but that doesn't mean that you decouple. That means you have a different way of cooperating.
And you also need to explain what security is, right?
Exactly.
It cannot be overblown.
No, definitely. And you have to be careful that obviously each thing which you don't do together, so each research which you do twice as mankind, is obviously a waste of resources. So we have to be very, very careful that we don't overdo it. A collaboration, especially on the research level, so between young people, for example, should always be promoted. And then on the application level, yes, there can be competitive areas, there can be collaborative areas, and there can also be exclusive areas. Mm-hmm. But that has always been the case. So I'm not so much afraid of the developments if they don't go too far.
Mm-hmm. You and your colleagues have been here in China long time, and you have been very instrumental in providing your thoughts both to the Chinese leadership and also to the people relevant for making things happen. Tell us more about your updated suggestions and ideas at a time when we are trying to see both sides, quote-unquote China and quote-unquote the West, are still trying to figure out how can we do the communication more than skin deep.
Well, the key thing, we are here now since 115 years in China, right?
Absolutely.
And we are now with 58,000 people here. So we are not a company which is doing that from the sideline, right? We are in the core of the economy, specifically in the automotive, but also home appliances and some other areas, industry itself. So the key thing right now, what you see is that the change is happening towards a more content-driven growth. That's really what is this quality development question. And the content-driven growth comes definitely also from this technology side. So that's what this new productivity quality forces, right, which are quoted. So the technology is now getting more and more important. Most key is that you see it also in China, that some areas China is leading in some areas already, which can then be transported also to other areas.
Like what?
Like the new energy vehicles. You see a lot of technology here in a much bigger scale, which are more customers applying. With the rise of the Chinese OEMs is a very good example. But also we see it more and more in this new supply chains that are built up for sustainability reasons. Mm-hmm. China has committed to 2060 targets, right? So you see more and more partners of us now working on sustainability questions. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing to monitor and to work with, because that's another way of collaboration. And by the way, that's for the planet.
There are some people who have the question about if China working on what China calls the new quality productive forces,
yes,
mainly to focus on innovation-related industries such as EVs and others, will the rest of the world be once again, as they see it, overblown by the Chinese products? Is that, how do you see mentalities like this?
Oh, always when we see technology, there's a huge way to do competitive work, because the consumers on the world are relatively free deciding what they buy. Yeah, there is some regulation on markets, but guess what? You can still decide in any kind of market, and especially free market economies, what you buy, from which manufacturer and what characteristics. So I'm actually very much for a good offering of products. And if Chinese products are now coming more to international markets, it's actually a better market afterwards, mm-hmm, because that will also unlock other innovation from other partners again. And if I see it from the mobility side, it's very good to see new car concepts coming in, specific consumer good targeted cars coming in, also from China, because that's new competition, that's a new offering, that's definitely also a great thing for the consumer. For us as technology providers, we anyway have to offer the full scale of productivity in all areas, mm-hmm, and therefore I like also this idea of this new quality productivity drivers of the let's say valuable growth. That is definitely what we do. We are invented for life with our ethos, right? So we want to use technology to bring new products to consumers having a better life. So that's perfectly fitting.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Still to come in the program, what it takes for businesses to survive and thrive, from PwC's Global Chairman Bob Moritz, a part of our special interviews with global business leaders. Next.
Beyond the headlines. This is World Insight.
Welcome back. This is World Insight. I'm Tian Wei. Uncertainties have taken their toll on the global economy and global companies. It is set for the weakest half-decade performance in 30 years, according to the World Bank. Despite the uncertainty, China posted a 5.2% GDP growth in the year 2023. This year, China aims for a round 5% GDP growth. That takes improving the business environment to better draw investments. Bob Moritz, the global chairman of PwC, was at several events in which China made strong gestures to boost the confidence and attract the foreign investors. My conversation with Bob latest. You have been witnessing Chinese government making efforts recently to win once again trust and confidence of international investors for win-win results. Now, what is your assessment of these efforts, and how do you see global companies are reacting?
So first off, it's clear through the IBLAC Beijing meetings as well as the CDF meetings that I attended last week that the Chinese government and the various administrative officials are on top of the issues testing their economies. But they are putting forth policies to enhance the economic growth. And then we see the pivot towards much more stable quality growth, more so than anything else before. And the policies are very much focused on both the continuation of the exports. Second is the transformation of the economy. And third is the integration of AI and the digital economies that we see going forward. So when you ask the question about CEOs around the world, let's also ground ourselves in some facts. First, it is a slowing economy worldwide. So they all are looking for growth. China continues to be a growth story, irrespective of the slowdown that may be happening in China, because the relative numbers are actually still relatively good. And that requires the CEOs to say, how can I actually leverage China for servicing Chinese citizens in China? Also, how can I leverage China for supply chain as we think about serving then the rest of the world? So there are many opportunities that the CEO community and their management teams are very much focused on in terms of how to sustain the business and enhance the investment and the willingness to actually continue that on a longer term basis looking ahead.
How do you see the transformation of the Chinese economy, a word that you mentioned also in your earlier answer? And also, how do you see that is influencing your portfolio here in China and beyond?
Yes, one thing to point out, and this comes out of our PwC CEO survey that we launched in Davos that you actually talked to us about, is that the Chinese CEOs are much more aware of the need to transform themselves because of the external factors that are moving so fast. In fact, it's one of the highest countries that has that awareness. And it's also based upon the fact that the Chinese economies have seen so much change when you look at regulation, IT, digital economies, and the world of commerce going forward. Now, the things that are happening today in China are very specifically focused on two larger phenomenons we see globally, that being AI as well as climate. And both of those are moving very fast in China. Not surprising when you look at the totality of the country, all focused in those areas to take advantage of the opportunities that have been put forth and the policies that the government has actually set for itself as a country. As a result, we, PwC, are navigating that same change and making sure we're enabling our trust services to be doing the job that we needed to do, but also to advise on business model transformation or reinvention with those two themes in mind. So we're recruiting quite a bit as you look at AI capabilities, digital capabilities, and climate capabilities in helping organizations with the future challenges and the many opportunities that will be coming their way.
You know, Bob, that some of the sectors that were earlier the pillars of the economic growth now become relatively flat. And therefore, for any company, global company that have been working with China on those sectors, have to also make a smooth transition, quote unquote. So how do you see the ultimate strategies, well, you can adopt during this smooth transition, quote unquote?
We've got to enhance the skill sets of our people and, if necessary, add capabilities so we can continue to build trust and actually solve for those problems. And the companies that are in China, no matter what sector exists today and what may be growing fast or slowing down, all of them have to go through the business model transformation. All of them have to be more trusted as well. So we see ourselves adding skills and competencies in those two areas across all sectors and across most of the regions across all of China as well. So that's a big opportunity for long-term growth for us and our value add in terms of the Chinese economies and the foreigners that are operating in China today.
The last few talks I had with you just right after 2023, I saw you traveling in very different parts of the world, looking at your business up close. So can you give me some takeaways out of these trips, how the world is evolving and what does that mean for your daily input?
You see the world actually breaking down in a couple of pieces. First, you see some parts of the world slowing down, other parts of the world speeding up, other parts of the world transforming their economies on a slow, sustained basis. And allocating the resources into those countries to maximize the potential that people have is going to be really important. So again, moving with speed, seeing the opportunities, minimizing the downside risk is going to be a needed skill set in managing the portfolio. So that's one thing. The second thing, though, that's clear is that organizations don't have a clean playbook anymore to deal with the many changes that are coming their way. So again, my words previously, scenario planning, having multiple options of choices, and being able to learn fast and fail fast is another learned skill that's going to be important moving ahead. And the last piece here, Tian, is you've got to be much more effective and efficient. Having a strong balance sheet, having the effectiveness and efficiency of an organization, and using data and technology to be most effective and efficient to do that in scale is going to be another needed skill set. And in this case, we see organizations trying to take out and eliminate bureaucracy, that being the fragmentation or the friction that gets in the way of a decision being executed effectively and efficiently. So that's another element of change that we see going forward.
Supply chains, you talk about that regarding China's role for global companies. You see some of the policies as a result of geopolitics have been changing so fast. So how would that supply chain role be designed? After all, sometimes the designing process would take even longer than, you know, the policy changes.
Well, first and foremost, organizations now have to put speed in the amount of change they're going to have as they become an alternative for supply chain. So that ability to move very fast and scale up very fast is going to be a key ingredient. But let's come back to some basics around supply chain. Every organization is going to be looking for an effective and efficient supply chain that's cost enabling. They're going to look for a supply chain that's much more greener than ever before. And they're going to look for a supply chain that gives it the right amount of data so they can actually decide quickly what to do. And that what to do means buy more or less, price differently, up or down. And those data points become really important. So the supply chain working within its ecosystem is another element of change that's going to be needed.
At this point, how do you examine the factor of AI? How much do you see global companies, when they are working with China, also bringing that factor in?
It's clear that the Chinese economy and the CEOs in China believe this is going to be a fast adoption within China. The second thing, though, that's important here is the lessons learned in adopting AI to your benefit. So first and foremost, AI is not necessarily just focused on productivity gains. There's a revenue opportunity that should come from that as well. And this is where organizations have to actually be mindful on both sides. 70-some-odd% of the CEOs that say they're going to adopt AI are looking for reductions in labor costs, which tells you they're so focused on the cost side, not the revenue side. So that's one flip that people should be focused on. Second is you've actually got to build it into your digital and your broader transformation agendas. A lot of times organizations are thinking about AI as a bolt-on to something else. It's actually going to be built in much more so. Third, you got to lead with humanity. What AI does is changes work processes. It changes needs of labor forces. So looking at it holistically with humans enabled by technology, enabled by the generative AI is going to be super important. And the more AI that's embedded within supply chains, the bigger the draw is going to be for organizations to want to use that. It'll be more effective, efficient, more cleaner, and be rich in data for decisions to be made better than ever before.
We see media reports recently, one after another, about the competition for talents among the top accounting firms and consultancy firms, including yours. So there are two sides of the things. One is, of course, looking for talents that are in huge need these days in order to develop the new sectors that you just mentioned. The other thing is reskilling the already existing staff about the future. So how is that being massaged? These two ideas together within your organization?
Yeah, it's a great question. Talent management is becoming so important as you think about its ability to actually enable the strategic execution that an organization has. And you started with two things. I'm going to add another one, which is okay. How do we actually bring in new skill sets? So that's going to come from talent acquisitions, recruiting in new and different places. And clearly in China, we will be looking at some additional schools to go after that, in addition to then the mid-career hires. M&A will become part of that issue as well. The second piece is the investment that we make in upskilling and reskilling. And in this regard, we're spending billions of RMB in terms of upskilling our existing workforce to be fit for future going forward. The third that I want to add to the mix is how do you create the right environment to retain those people? And that's equally as important because that's a talented group of people that will be demand elsewhere. So we're also doubling down on what does it take to retain the people that we have today. And you have to actually be smart about not only the skilling, but also allowing for them to redesign the work that they actually perform. By doing that, they're more willing to be part of the process rather than have the process be done to them. If they're part of that process, they're more productive, they're more engaged, they're more willing to be productive as an individual and a better team player. So that's equally as important as the recruitment of these new skills or the upskilling of these skills Retention is another challenge. That's a big opportunity that we see in China, and PwC is investing quite a bit to make that a reality.
And that's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei on behalf of my team. Thanks for being with us. And tomorrow, we're going to continue our series of interviews with global business leaders. Bye for now.